Hello and welcome to the Vorthos cast. I'm Lorelei Weissel-Labrizzi.
I'm Brian Dawes.
I'm Chris Delano.
And I'm Carrie Yeehaw Thomas.
Yeehaw! Giddy up.
That's right, Thunder Junction started early, because why wouldn't it?
Yeah, we've gotten the first slew of stories published for Laws of Thunder Junction earlier than expected, so here at the Vorthos cast, we've been scrambling to re-kerjigger our schedule for everything. So we're going to talk about the first two main stories today, and we've got some cool stuff coming up in the future, and who knows exactly what the schedule will look like, but we'll get through everything at some point, eventually.
We're entering a phase of outlaws of podcasting, as our schedule might look kind of wild, wild west for a little while. Anyways.
Chris, never change.
We have some interviews we want to do. We had a announced start date of the story being not this week, and then it surprisingly was this week instead. And yeah, that's enough to shake us up a little bit. And we also have no idea how many episodes the story is, so kind of in a blind spot of we will roll with whatever story coverage we can do by the week and keep going with that.
If only Jay the Coward was here, he could tell us how many episodes there are. Maybe. Keeps that close to his chest.
He's too busy trying to get Doretti back in Magic.
You know what? We already pitched him on Wild Wild West Spider Doretti a while ago.
Wow.
We were talking about Thunder Junction. I think that's the cultural touchstone that's really needed for a Universes Beyond set at this point. Probably
can't,
not.
Can't say that film was among the films I really had in the forefront of my mind while writing creative text for the set. But
I think we need a Wild Wild West secret layer so that we can get a Will Smith card that does direct damage to creatures.
Oh my god. Yes, please.
All right. We should actually talk about the story.
Yeah, who wants to take story summary number one?
I can start us off. There's a cat in my lap right now, by the way, all you listeners. I just need you to imagine how wonderful life is to be talking on a Magic podcast while petting a cat. Anyways, it's a good feeling, right?
By the way, we should, before we get into summaries, say returning author for Thunder Junction, we have Akemi Don Bowman back, who did the story for the main story for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. And I think some side stories somewhere. Is that right?
She also did the Kaido Shizuki side stories for Neo. And I think that might
those
be
those got
it.
Released early.
Yeah.
Forgot about those.
Yeah. But she wrote she's written this Outlaws of Thunder Junction story, and it's some real good stuff. I'm really happy with it so far. We're two episodes in as of day of releasing this. The first story is called An Offer of Revenge, and it starts out with a mysterious package being passed through an omen path into the care of the Sterling Company, who at this point we don't really know much about, but we're learning more as the story goes on. And they have a carriage set up with guards and this courier who's going to be taking it from this omen path back to the Sterling Company base, which is a city called Prosperity. And he's expecting there to be trouble, because why else would you have a mysterious package being delivered by a courier who doesn't know what's inside, flanked by a bunch of guards? So he's thinking, like, this has got to be something important. And sure enough, he does meet some trouble on the road as a giant fire-breathing dragon scorpion, or they would call it a Drapion, but I think that's taken by Pokemon. Also, like, a demon. There's a lot going on with this character.
It's Malfagor 2.0 is what it looks like.
Oh, no.
Does kind of look like a Wild West Malfagor. But this demon dragon thing is named Akul, and he's looking for a key. And he thinks that this package that he's about to take from this this carriage is the key he's looking for. So he burns the whole thing to the ground, kills everyone, takes the package, opens it up, and it's just full of rocks. So turns out not what he was looking for. Later on, sometime shortly after this, the sort of point of view character, the protagonist of this story so far, Annie Flash, rides up on this burnt out caravan, and she knows what she knows what's happened here. She's familiar with this being done by that horrible leader of the Hellspurs, which is a gang of troublemakers on that Thunder Junction, what he's up to. She knows his MO. And she looks through the carriage and she finds a big old chest full of gold, which means that whoever did this, Akul, was not looking for money or anything like that. There was something else going on here. So she already knows there's some trouble brewing. She heads back to her small town, which she's, you know, somewhat familiar with the general store owner, splits the gold with him, arranges for some groceries and things of that sort, and then heads on home to her remote farm, where there is a very charming stranger wearing a fancy suit and clean shoes waiting for her. And that is unusual, you could say. And she uses the magic of one of her eyes. She's got this special golden eye that can see through illusions. And she sees that it's actually Oko. Oko has rejoined the story. He's back. It's been a little while. And he is there to offer Annie a job. Turns out Annie used to be some outlaw of renown, and Oko is familiar with her. And she says, absolutely not, no interest, I'm not working with you. And he says, well, I mean, just remember, if I can find you all the way out here in the middle of nowhere, then Akul can find you all the way out here in the middle of nowhere. And Annie has made it pretty clear that she does not want to encounter Akul ever again. Something went south in her history with him. Oko leaves her with a matchbook and says, hey, just, you know, think about it. This is an offer you can't refuse.
No, that's a different plane with a different theme.
Very closely related, though, we learned. But anyways, from there, we cut over to the goodest boy, Kellen, who's working on a crew building these relays for one Mr. Raoul Zarek, who is working for Niv-Mizzet, setting up this communication system through the Omen Paths. And of course, it is Izzet technology, so someone immediately gets shocked by a giant lightning bolt and knocked off their little pylon. And Kellen uses his Fey magic to fly up and save the guy. And it's, you know, Kellen just being Kellen. This is what he does. He helps people. He's a good boy. Turns out, as Kellen makes it clear to us, Ezram told him that his father was here on Thunder Junction, and he has taken a job with the Izzet and with specifically Raoul Zarek's little crew here to build these pylons so that he can get close enough to find where his father, Oko, is hiding. He shows that he's got some skill, though, and the boss on this site sends him with Raoul Zarek to protect him on their way to Prosperity, where the headquarters of the Sterling Company are located. So things are starting to come together. And that's where we leave off of episode one, An Offer of Revenge.
Well, I think we can't talk about the story without giving Raoul Zarek a round of applause for finally leaving Ravnica. Only took him 15 years.
All right, but here's the thing. Teferi didn't, like, officially leave Dominaria until he resparked. Like, we've had characters who were functionally as plane bound but still iconic for planeswalkers. Raoul is an interesting choice for preserving the spark. It makes sense for the scope of Niv-Mizzet's proposed plans that we know of from murders at Karlov Manor. However, yeah, I'm still not wild about Raoul being sparked, and the only good thing that can come out of this is, like, alt art Raoul in the planeswalker getup, assless chaps and all, in Thunder Junction. So we'll see.
As has been pointed out in our live listen chat, there is a very real chance that Ralzeric didn't even planeswalk to Thunder Junction. There's a very real chance he just used an omen path. So, like, he has his spark, but it's totally possible he hasn't actually planeswalked anywhere.
Yeah, judging by the fact that Kellen is with him, there's a good chance that they just walk through the same omen path instead of Rao planeswalking, then Kellen meeting him elsewhere.
Or how about this? Rao planeswalked, then Kaya took Kellen on a spaceless word adventure across the plains.
I'm very very happy, Kerry, that you were thinking exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, it does make sense for precise shuttling. We're not really getting the going through the omen path from front to back situations in a lot of the omen path arc so far. Kellen just kind of walks through, Chandra and Nyssa walk through, and then the stories are usually picking up long after they've walked through. So maybe that's a little bit of a criticism. I would like to see some actual traversing happening. However, yeah, like this was the perfect way to set the scene for Thunder Junction. Mm-hmm. We all knew that it was going to be a heist going into this from the panel previews. So literally setting the gang up is good start, and explaining why Kellen is there. Ezram knowing off-plane knowledge is very interesting, because that means Rami probably has a lot more information than we initially believe. Whether that could in fact impact why people were invading Alquist Prof's mind, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But
got some thoughts on that after the next episode, because golly, things are coming together. Characters are showing back up in story. Things are, this is clearly a like little mini, like I would say like mid-season finale, you know, situation for Magic Story. Like the way this is coming together, it's like, oh, we're pulling in plot threads from the first, you know, few sets after Mom. Bringing things back together, and it's like, all right, so is this gonna be a War of the Spark / March of the Machine level ending for an arc, or are we getting something kind of smaller here? And it feels like it's smaller but also big, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a culmination of the impact open paths have had on the multiverse, both in terms of world building and in possibility of storytelling, right? We have characters from mostly the last year of Magic assembling, and it's not gonna be like world reorganizing like March of the Machine or The Mending or whatever. But this is gonna be, I think describing it as like a mid-season finale before a winter break type situation is like exactly the vibe of Thunder Junction. We're pulling some things together that will continue setting things up. It's big, but it's not like cataclysmically big. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
I do wonder what happens if Rakdos, like, never mind, wrong story. Continue.
Well, we should get into the second story then. Who wants to talk about episode 2, the jailbreak?
Yes, I can, since I brought it up. So our next story starts with Annie making the decision to go ahead and go to the Wild Card Saloon and meet Ogo's crew. Tiny Bones the Thief, Breaches the Munitions Expert, Malcolm the Scout, Ariette the Charmer, Geralf the Medic, Gisa, not quite the medic, Rakdos the Muscle, Raska the Second in Command, and their benefactor, Ashiok, who wants some source of unknown power, untold power, as Breaches calls it. And like she gets a hint of the chaos this crew is. She's basically sitting at the eye of a hurricane. It's Breaches is chasing Tiny Bones for stealing a pocket watch, causing all sorts of mayhem. It's a hoot. So Oko outlines a plan to rob Mog Taranau, a massive vault that was the only thing on Thunder Junction before the Omen Pass. It also happens to be the Fortress of Akul and the Hellspurs. But first, a jailbreak in Prosperity. And they need to rob the head of the Sterling Company, who has the key. And this is the item that was the part of the distraction at the beginning of the first story. So basically, Oko and the party infiltrate Sterling Company with Tiny Bones in a box. Ariette charms a bunch of guards. And then Oko, like, shapeshifts from a courier to get in, who delivers Tiny Bones in the box and turns into a guard to walk down the hall and get to the room where Tiny Bones' box is locked. And Ariette gets Annie to the jail where there are illusions hiding the locked up criminals. They rescue Satoru Umezawa. I'm still kind of interested in whether that's really his last name or if that's, you know, something that he commandeered. And Kaer Vec, who is newly freed from the Amber Prison, they do not like each other in the slightest. But Satoru leaves and goes to find Oko, surprises Oko in the room with Tiny Bones in the box, and he points them to the painting, which is customarily where people hide their safes, and they find the key. And they are about to get out scot-free with no one the wiser until Kellen shows up following Rao. And apparently Oko's disguises cannot hold in the presence of another Fae. And all heck breaks loose. There's a shootout. It's full of action. Kellen, Rao sees Vraska and she hits him with, "Oh, you thought I was dead?" And right after that, Rakdos punches him in the face. Guild leader on guild leader crime, even though it's not on Ravnica. And Kellen helps him escape, and Oko thinks it's useful to be a dad. Of course, he's not looking to pay any child support or anything. He just thinks it's useful. Not nice, just useful.
Hey, the best use of... Jay's not here, so I can say this. The best use of children is emotionally manipulating them to do crimes for you.
Wow.
I feel like I have to say, legally speaking, if any jurists of any sort are listening to us, that was a joke. No children have been convinced to commit crimes here. I love this episode so much. This was so good.
One of my favorite things that Akemi does in this set's story is juggle really good pithy character interactions. One of the joys of taking a bunch of characters who are in supporting roles in the last year and then folding them into one place is watching all the personality clashes. And I think Akemi just nails it throughout all of these stories.
Also, real quick, so we can take a moment, yes, we called Satoru Umezawa and Kaer Vec in our presentation at Chicago, so little round of applause for us. Of course, Jay and Lorelai knew, but the rest of us did not know.
We were very nervous putting the list together because we're like, we gotta make sure it doesn't look like we just told everybody all the information.
There was definitely a period of time where we were debating people to cut from the list, and Satoru Umezawa was one on the chopping block. And I was like, no, I want to keep him. I like talking about him. So, yeah, I called that one. I'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
So Satoru and Karavec have a wonderful little quippy moment, like you were saying, in the jail, where Karavec is like, "You're so good at picking locks. Why are we still in here?" And Satoru is like, "I don't know. You've got so much experience being in a jail."
Yeah, it's great. Echoes of my favorite frenemies, Teversat and Lashrak, from the Armada comics 30 years ago. Planeswalkers who ostensibly hate each other and belittle each other constantly, yet they're always palling around together. This has, like, Karavec and Satoru have similar vibes to me. It's great. And, like, I love that we get the Karavec payoff that was set up in All Will Be One last year in the Teferi side story. It was, like, a little note in the Teferi side story was, oh, no, Karavec has escaped the Amber Prison. And everyone is like, who is that? What is that? What does this matter? And the answer is because we're bringing back a villain from Mirage and Visions into Magic Story. And it's great. He's like one of the big deep cut characters that got put in the set. I'm very happy about it.
There's art of him in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his, like, crown that he's wearing in his other art, except it's a cowboy hat and it's got fire in it. It's very, very good. I like it. And then also, like, this little crew is great, and it also, no one was expecting it. No one had called it that this is all Ashiok's plan putting together. Everyone was saying, like, thinking Oko was the ringleader of all this, but this is all Ashiok bringing together this little crew.
Hey.
I love that.
Hey, remember at the end of the Eldraine story where Ashiok shows up to Ariette in prison?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was talking about that for, like, all these months. And I'm just like, did that one really slip by people?
I mean, I think it's because the original Throne of Eldraine really didn't play that much into March of the Machine or the Phyrexian story. And so everyone was just like, oh, yeah, that's not going to have anything to do. None of that's going to matter. And then it mattered a lot. Also, since we mentioned it earlier, there's a little line about what Ashiok does, and Oko says they deal in nightmares and can extract information from a person's mind. What happened in the murders at Markov? Oh my god, I'm Jay this week, aren't I?
Got
him. Murders at Karlov Manor story, except someone broke into Alquist's prof's mind and took something. So, kind of, maybe there's a potential that mysterious figure was just Ashiok.
It's possible.
It's a mystery.
No, we just got done with the mystery set. Get out of here.
It's a cowboy mystery.
This is also, I keep hammering down this point, Karavec's story debut, considering Mirage and Visions stories were only told through story summaries and flavor text for the most part, but the flavor text did characterize Karavec very well. Mm-hmm. It was just, and I see that characterization continuing through in his conqueror banter with Satoru. But yeah, we're at a point where Karavec has got off the island of characters who have never appeared in stories, and it's just like Aminatsu and Kallax there, I think. So yeah, I'm happy they finally found a use for him. I hope this isn't a Suicide Squad situation where we'll slowly see a number of these characters killed off throughout the story. I would not be surprised. It's a very, very dangerous gambit, and they're going up against, the Hellspurs and a demon scorpion thing. So, not out of the question, but as far as I'm concerned, like, these characters are very, very likable. They're a lot of fan favorite antagonists. So
I just want to say that Rakdos clearly needs to work with his recruiter a little bit better, because this is not helping my HR problem with him. Like, you can't just be the muscle of an all-villains group and me be able to defend you. Like, I'm not Jay. I have some scruples.
I was going to say, I think it's kind of funny that Rakdos's new HR lead is like, what, Oko?
Or Ashiok?
Ashiok. God, I love this little crew. I will say, Gisa and Garolf being here, they are Innistrad's best heroes. I don't know what they're doing in the villain set.
Por qué?
They have saved Innistrad more than anyone else. This is not... They're not villains. Come on.
Liliana would like a word.
Liliana has, with the help of Gisa and Garolf, saved Innistrad, sure. But, like, they've been part of it every time. They saved him from Phyrexia, at least.
They did also destroy Thraben.
Thraben had it coming.
I mean, she opened the Hell Vault. And then she helped with the Emrakul problem before Emrakul decided that she was going to go home and take her moon with her.
I'm just saying, I'm worried about the state of Innistrad right now without Kisa and Garolf there to protect them from all sorts of problems.
It's fine. The Celestia Angel Sigarda will be there.
It's true. And she can still make Halo.
Oh, she does do that. Shoot, I forgot.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of expecting Aftermath. Halo to be a little bit more of a thing.
Yeah.
Post Aftermath and March of the Machine, but
there's still time. There's still time.
There's still time, but it feels worse the longer it draws out for, because
there are confirmed cocktail bars from New Capenna on Thunder Junction via the site, one of the side stories. So
yeah, it's still mostly a New Capenna thing. I think the intent of Sigarda's Aftermath card is that it's supposed to be like kind of weird that she still has access to that power. And kind of unique. But that's not about the story. So we're very good at getting sidetracked. This is delivering on a lot of good cowboy things, like jailbreaks and robbing a safe for a key to access a mysterious treasure. Like with our rootin' tootin' gang of scoundrels. And you know, the bright-eyed, morally not yet corrupted kid, and finding meaning and purpose in the wilderness with your deadbeat dad. Like, we're just hitting like so many vibes in just one story. It's great. And that'll keep happening. And it's a lot of fun. I think a lot of what these first two stories do real good is hit the trope space with a lot of magic flair, which I think is one of the things that magic storytelling has gotten very good at.
Yeah, it feels a lot like a Western, like a, you know, gathering of the outlaws of a town area. It's just, yeah, it's hitting a lot of those tropes very well. I'm mostly just appreciating the way that all of these characters are sliding into Western tropes without it feeling forced at all. So, like, you know, the flexible thief who can sneak in and steal things with tiny bones, and the expert in all sorts of bombs and munitions with breaches. You know, all these characters are just fitting a role perfectly well that you would expect to see in like a Western caper. And they're all coming from different planes in magic to do that. And I think that's a really cool way to put things together. I don't know. Whoever's making these story decisions is a pretty smart person, I'm going to say. If you're listening, Graham, and other people on the story team.
Yeah. I mean, we could have probably packed one more story into this episode. Yeah. But I'm fine with this one running a little bit short, considering...
I am also fine with a
short episode. We have at least one bonus episode coming outside of regular scheduling, and then kind of in a race to deal with as many stories as are released, because
we'll figure it out.
Plans changed.
We're gonna have to throw the thing we do with the cards, flavor gems in there somewhere too. And maybe have a whole episode about world building. I don't know. There have been a lot of questions about world building, you know, who actually lived on Thunder Junction before the Omen Paths opened up, and we'll get to that stuff. Preview season is soon?
Starting sometime at the end of this month, I think.
Like less than 2 weeks? I don't remember. It's soonish. Yeah. So like, we'll get there. if nobody else has anything to say, then we can start wrapping things up, I guess.
One last thing I do want to mention. There's been a lot of speculation about how this story is going to handle Vraska. Because, you know, kind of a big deal. She was Phyrexian and then she got shocked a bunch and now she's not Phyrexian. And we're going to have to see what that looks like. And hopefully maybe we'll get a story about it. But I will say, just from what we've seen so far, it is mentioned that she is covered in scars. It may not be something we can see very clearly in like the art, the one piece of art we've seen of Vraska so far. But the story mentions that she is covered in scars. So there's a very good chance that her de-Phyrexianization process was not very comfortable. We're going to have to learn about it. Who knows? By the time this episode comes out, there may have been a story released about it. We don't know. We don't know the schedule. This surprised us. We weren't expecting this to come out a week early.
Yeah.
Hooray. We'll surprises. See.
Yeah.
Happy Pi Day also.
As of date of recording, because no one's going to hear this until several days after Pi Day.
Yeah, it's okay.
By now, you can probably get a really cheap pie at your local bakery.
I haven't had a good pie in a while.
I was craving it all day.
What kind of pie?
I really, really right now, I want like a cream pie, you know, not like, oh, that sounds awful. I want, you know what I mean? Like an Oreo pie, like something that's like not a fruit pie, but like, yeah.
My sister makes a very good apple pie.
Mm.
I like apple pie. Anyway, segue into final thoughts. Final thought for this week. I like comic books. And now that they're finally out, I finally picked up the Fire and Ice Welcome to Smallville miniseries, 6 issues. I'm excited to read it. I love everything that's came out of the era of the Justice League International. Everyone on that team is a moron and I love them dearly. So I'm excited. I did see that Lobo is in it also, and I love Lobo. So I'm excited to read some comic books. One of my partners works at a comic shop now, so I'm going to get a lot of comic books in the near future, and it's dangerous for me. Which is fine by me. I love comics. But I'm excited for that.
My final thought is that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is great. It has stolen a lot of my evenings, and it's just great. Also, Frieren is amazing. Frieren Beyond Journey's End is a great anime, and you should watch it.
I'm grumpy at it, but... Oh. For my own specific reasons, but I won't get into it. I'm not gonna yuck your yum on your final thought.
That's fair.
A lot of people like it. There's a lot of very charming things about it. And Frieren is a phenomenal character. She's doofy. But I had to stop watching it.
I don't watch anime.
Not yeah, really. Me either.
Did have the weird experience of having a contractor who's doing some work on the house asked me what anime I like, and I'm just like, we are both like 30 something years old. I don't think we should be having this conversation. I don't know. My final thought is just you know, I had something teed up before we started recording, can't remember it at all. I'm just going to say that I've got a burrito waiting for me for once we're done recording. So if this episode is like super short and you're like, what happened? Why is this so short? Just notes because I wanted to eat a burrito.
You don't have to take the bullet for us, Chris.
That's all. That's all I got to add.
All right. So my final thought, the spiel.
The spiel.
MTGlore.com has updated. I have added links to 42 or 43 magic books from the past that you can borrow to read for free on archive.org. These are on there now. Whether Wizards of the Coast takes issue with a book from 30 years ago being available for free on a loan basis in the future, who knows? But Wizards has been extremely, extremely spotty with reprinting stuff in the past. The only real exception I can think of is the Artifact Cycle novels. And so, while I love to be conscious of authors getting paid for their work, these books are very, very long out of print, most of them for over 15 years or so at minimum, and in some cases they're approaching 30. So these are available for free to borrow and read. I believe the archive.org limit for most materials that you borrow is an hour, and then you can renew it every hour to continue reading. There's stuff like The Thran, The Brothers' War, Time Streams, Distant Plains, which is what Lorelei will tell you to read. You probably shouldn't, but you know, Z will tell you to read it. And it is quite the collection of materials. If at any point things change and there are actual reprints made to any of these books, then I mean, I'll take it down the link wise, but it's more of publisher issue to take it down on archive.org's end, so that they can encourage actual book sales. But we're kind of in the pendulum swing of on and off for Magic selling books. We've been in the off for quite a while post Forsaken and the e-novellas. And whether we ever go back to that model, who knows? But these are old, largely irrelevant books, so pretty safe when they've been out of print for decades at a time. But yeah, and then keeping up to date on Outlaws of Thunder Junction story on there. Adding a whole bunch of Duelist magazine content, more than you can possibly imagine. Yeah, that's basically been the site update in very short. But go there, explore story, click on story to get to the main wizard site. And there aren't many avenues to actually buy books from Wizards at this point. I think they still sell digital copies of Time Spiral Trilogy through their storefront. I don't know which other ones through their Amazon storefront, so I can't really say, like, go buy the books that you want to buy, because there are so few that are digitally available where proceeds would actually go anywhere meaningful. But yeah, if you want more magic books, you can yell at them. Yell at them in support, not in antagonism, just in support of more magic books being made. I think we would like to see it done right. I'm kind of heartened by the current story arc and just how much care has gone into the worlds, how much through line it seems to have going for it. Things seem to be getting teased and set up adequately in advance, so that there is a payoff at the end. And I'm excited to see where this arc goes, but wouldn't mind a supplemental novel or two either. So go support that. Go read books, read old as fuck books, and enjoy Magic Story.
And if you... go ahead, Chris.
This is a good setup for you. And also, if you ever have the time or the funding to do so, supporting archive.org is a very, like, good thing you can do. They play a very important role in the, like, maintenance of internet history, but also just media history in general. A lot of like films, games, a lot of movies, movies. Yeah, those would be lost forever if it wasn't for archive.org keeping them. You can play whole games on archive.org. I think you can actually play Chandelar on archive.org, but I'm not positive about that. You play them entirely in browser, which is a really interesting thing. But yeah, so it's good to support archive.org and, you know, support internet historians in a way.
Yeah, and you can also support the Vorthos cast by heading to archive.org, borrowing Distant Planes, reading the short story Foulmare, falling in love with Vram, and then letting Wizards of the Coast that you really want to see Vram on a Planeswalker card. That is pretty much the number one thing you could possibly do to support us at the Vorthos cast and to support Magic Story right now.
What's the number two, though?
Number two what?
Number two way to support us.
Oh, number two way to support us would be to head to patreon.com/thevorthoscast. As little as $1 a month keeps us going and gives you access to our Discord community where Vorthoses from around the world are doing things like sitting in our live listen chat, telling Chris how many times he's said murders at Markov Manor.
One time.
We have a $1 tier that gets you access to the Discord server, and then we also have a $3 tier. Where you can join us for live listens of the podcast. We record Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if that's a time frame that you have open and you would love to hang out with us before the show, after the show, you know, hear what we're talking about a couple days early, hear all the times that we mess up, there's a tier for that too. But otherwise, we're going to wrap up a short little sweet episode. So thank you all for listening. This has been the Vorthos Cast.